And now, an Envision Financial podcast with Luke Smith on Canberra's 2CC.
Time to welcome Luke Smith into the studio once again from Envision Financial. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Are you going to get yourself a Sydney Rooters jersey?
Well, I'm definitely going to. I'm not going to employ.
Pull that mic over a bit closer to your face.
I'm not going to employ the person that's done the proofreading on that one. Especially not when you've just gone and highlighted their career change.
it's hilarious.
Hey, it's quite timely. We're talking about Centrelink. The person that does the proofreading there might need to go to Centrelink after that.
Yes. Well, as previously promised, today's topic is a follow-up on our recent discussion of the Centrelink assets test. And today we're going to talk about the Centrelink income test, which is the other big test that you must pass in order to get a Centrelink pension.
Exactly.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because both tests are applied to you, but if you fail one of them, you're out.
Well, that's exactly right. And you know, so we spoke last week about the asset test, and this is the other side of the two scenarios that you must adhere to apply for age pension benefits. And again, just a quick reminder out of the gates. To be eligible for the age pension, 67 onwards, that is not your retirement age. Off the back of last week's show, I've had a number of people reach out this week in the office and go, well, I'll retire at 67.
Mm.
And people seem to be confusing your entitlement age for Centrelink with your superannuation preservation age, which if you're born after 1965 is 60. Mm-hmm. So let's not muddy the two together, because I've had a few people nearly in tears this week because they in their mind had said, well, I'm going to have to work to 67, not realizing that they could get their benefits at 60 from a super perspective.
Of course, for practical purposes, if you don't really have very much super, you might well have to say that your 67 is your retirement age.
Quite possibly.
Because you're not likely to get the age pension before that, are you?
Exactly right. So the income test is the second part of the assessment that Centrelink make. And what they do is they look at the income that you generate from just about any source of gainful employment. Now, that could include full-time wages, part-time wages. That could include defined benefit pensions. So if you've got a CSS, PSS, DFRDB, MSBS pension, you've got an income stream from another super fund that is of a defined nature. You could have rent from an investment property. You could have director's fees. You could have any form of remuneration where you've undertaken personal exertion, fancy way of saying working.
Mm-hmm.
They add all of that income up when they look at you as a couple or as an individual, depending on your situation. And they make an assessment within a range of limits to see what, if anything, you're entitled to, or a partial entitlement where you might be halfway up the income test. So to start by putting some context around that, if we look at a couple can earn $9,360 and receive a full entitlement under the income test. Now, a full pension for a couple is about $43,700 a year. If you earn more than $96,865, then you are over the maximum income test and you would receive no age pension. And we spoke last week about what are my assessable assets, and we addressed some strategies there to try and reduce that. Part of the income test loops back around on that deeming conversation that we had last week.
Yes.
And this is where deeming gets applied to financial assets. So we look at something and say, have I got income from employment or an income stream? Then they say, do I have superannuation? And if I have $500,000 of superannuation, the asset value would fall under the asset test. And then they apply the deeming rate, which is up to 100,000 at 0.25 and then 2.25 over that. They deem, or they assume, a rate of income from your investments. So in that example, if they deemed you to have $10,000 of income, but you generate or take as a pension $20,000, that's completely fine, because they're not assessing you on what you take. They're assuming that what you have is going to earn a rate of return. So you've got pension, you've got rent, you've got anything that is an ongoing form of remuneration. Now, that could include some abnormal things like the cash out of leave entitlements while you're working. So you might have long service leave that get cashed out. That's deemed as income. You could even have, from a deeming perspective, a loan that can fall under deeming rules as well. So you need to be fairly specific around your situation, but we need to put, again, in the context, where do I sit on the asset test? Where do I sit on the income test? And which one will give me the least amount of money? Because you might have super that you draw an income stream from and they deem you at a lesser rate, but you might have assets that are over the threshold. So whilst you might be eligible under the income test because you've earned less than $96,865 as a couple,
mm-hmm.
your total asset level may be more than the $1,012,000 threshold for a couple in that example. So again, it's not this or that. It's a combination of the two. And they are intertwined in a way because of the deeming rules around the assets that you have. And any financial asset that you have across various structures, could be a company, could be a trust, super fund, you need to look at what is my total amount of income. So if you were halfway up that test and said, okay, I'm earning, you know, $50,000, I'm about halfway up the income test, then you'd be entitled to a prorated amount of pension of, say, $21,000, being roughly half of the $43,000 limit for a couple. And the same applies for a single person. If you earn under $5,300, full pension. If you earn over $63,351, income cut out for you. So you've got to look at your situation and say, am I single, am I a couple? How am I assessed? And then where do I fit on the income side? Then overlay it with where do I sit on the asset test? And then you work out which one gives you your entitlement calculation. Because a lot of people leap to, oh, I'll get full pension here because I'm only earning this. But you've got assets over here that are in excess of the limit,
yeah.
which knock you out.
There's a curious item on this list of things that are considered to be income in mm-hmm. the eyes of Centrelink. The bottom of the list says, proceeds from the sale of your home would also be deemed under the income test. So
yeah.
what that is saying to me is that's the proceeds from the sale of the home.
Yep.
Still constitute an asset, correct. But they're going to deem an income from that asset.
Correct.
So they're not going to assess you on the actual amount of money you received for selling your home.
No, that's right. So let's put an example together there quickly. So I sell my house for $1.5 million. I buy another house for $1 million and I downsize. And that generation of people that have a lot of asset value tied up in their home, they go, well, here's a massive asset. I'm rattling around in here. The kids have all moved out. I'm tired of the gardens and the cleaning and the heating and all the other palaver that comes with a massive place. I'd like to use some of that money to change my lifestyle. Great. Now, you might have a $1.5 million house that's exempt from an asset perspective because the family home's exempt. You downsize, you buy something for $1 million. Now you've got $500,000 of assets that's just fallen in the lap of Centrelink. And they go, oh, are you both age pension age? Yes, we are. And we said last week, if you have a spouse that isn't, you want to think about getting the money into their name in super and not starting a pension because it's exempt. So check out last week's show for that strategy. But they're then going to look at that $500,000 and say, okay, that plus whatever else you might have in super could significantly impact your eligibility from a Centrelink perspective. So downsizing might actually be detrimental to your broader cash flow.
Yeah.
Because you could have less than $450,000 in super, get the full age pension, and have a $1.5, $2 million house. You could downsize thinking you're going to get more money and actually lose some of your entitlement and reduce your net cash flow.
And in that example, say you've got the $500,000, it doesn't matter whether you keep it in the bank, buy shares with it.
No.
Put it into some other investment, it's still going to be deemed in the same way.
Exactly right. Exactly right. They'll assume you have a rate of return. Now, if you take that money and buy some highly speculative stuff, good on you. If you take that money and throw it in a term deposit and you earn more than the deeming rate, good on you. And what they want is they want to stimulate investment and give you some incentive to say, well, I'll go out and generate more than what you're going to assume I get, so I win. But again, you have to keep in mind that if you're downsizing with a big number, it could actually take all of your Centrelink entitlements away, and if you have medical issues or pharmaceutical requirements and you lose the age pension, that could be quite expensive from a medical standpoint, because one of the big benefits that a lot of people come in, I need that in pharmaceutical stuff, I need a dollar of age pension because my medications are really expensive. Just be mindful that whilst the downsizing legislation is great, it's not always great from a Centrelink perspective. Just keep that in mind.
All right. What if you take your hypothetical $500,000 and just spend it? If you go on a world trip and the money's gone, it can't be an asset then, can it?
No, that's right. Because then what you'd do is you'd go in and you'd reassess with Centrelink and they'd say, okay, well, what have you got? And if you've gone and spent it, well, good on you.
What if you spend it on a very expensive car? Is the car an asset?
Car's an asset.
But it doesn't produce an income.
No, but it falls under the asset test and then might blow up your asset assessment. I like your thinking.
I know, but yeah. I just wanted to get that Lamborghini after all these years, you know?
And that's okay. You can have your Lamborghini. You just might lose the age pension.
Oh, you can't win, can
and,
you?
And some might say that's a good thing.
They might indeed.
Oh, but again, that's the thing here, right? It's about looking at the scenario holistically and being comfortable that you're aware of what the likely outcome will be before you go and make that decision to do something like downsizing.
Now, the way this works is that, as you've pointed out, there is we'll just take the single full pension as an example.
Yeah.
There's a threshold below which you will receive the full pension, and that threshold is just over $5,000.
Yep.
If you earn more than $5,000, but less than the top cutout at $63,351, then your pension will be reduced by 25 cents in the dollar for every dollar you earn above that bottom threshold.
Correct.
Okay. So I haven't done all the mathematics here, and I think it's probably beyond my ability.
Mm.
But is there a spot in that sliding scale between 5,000 and 63,000 where you strike a happy balance where you get a decent amount of pension and you're still getting a decent amount of superannuation income, for example?
Yeah, look, exactly right. And that's where knowing what you're going to have can be very beneficial. The same example on the asset test side, if you think about how that works, because it's a bit easier for people to picture, you've got $1 million limit, you've got 450 minimum. If you have $450,000 of assets, that will generate about 20 grand of income at 5% that you'd take because you're over 65 and 5% is the minimum drawing. If you have $1 million of assets, or let's say you had $1.1 million of assets, if you think this is going to sound silly, but you're actually being punished because 1.1 million of asset will generate say 55,000 of income. If you've got 450, you're going to get 43,000 as a couple plus another 20 because of your 450 at 5%. You're at 63,000. 1.1
million. So you've actually got better income than somebody has more assets.
Correct. And this is the stupidity of where the thresholds have got to. And to your point with the income, it's similar. You need to say, okay, well, a lot of people make the assumption, well, I won't work because I'll pay tax and I'll lose my pension. But if you can earn some and then reduce your entitlement by a prorated amount, you may be better off from a net perspective. And again, we just want people to think, don't assume that lost is bad. Because if you can do some part-time work and have some engagement, you know, some socialising, some purpose and keep your brain ticking over and get a little bit less. I've often said to people, I'd rather you earn more and have that engagement and purpose than get this. And even if you keep a few dollars and keep all the benefits, because, you know, the broader benefits are worth 5 to sort of 7,000 when you look at the rates, the concessions and everything else. So, you know, that has financial benefit as well, even though your pension amount may have been reduced.
Indeed. Luke Smith from Envision Financial is with me in the studio today, and we're talking about the Centrelink income test and how it works. It's about 10 to 5. Back with more in just a moment. 7 minutes to 5. It's a Friday afternoon, of course, but you already know that. I say it because every Friday we have Luke Smith from Envision Financial with us in the studio. Today we're talking about the Centrelink income test. It's not as frightening as it sounds.
No.
There's a little bit of complexity, but Luke, what are the key things for people to remember?
Look, the first thing is, you need to keep in mind that it's the deemed rate of income from your assets, not what you're taking as a pension. A lot of people come in and go, but I'm taking this much pension, I'm going to be over. It doesn't matter what you take, It's the amount of income that they assume you generate from your financial assets. So that's important.
Yep.
Remember that other third-party assets will be included, such as rent. Now, that can also be net rent. So you're
able, is rent you're receiving.
Correct, rent from a property, or the net rent less deduction. So, you know, they'll allow you a tax deduction for interest and other, you know, maintenance and upkeep. So you need to report that. It'll include part-time or full-time work. And if you're part of a couple, it's the couple's income. Even though one of you may be eligible, if you're over that $96,000 limit because spouse A is working and spouse B is entitled, you're going to be over the income test. So whilst you might be the age for Centrelink, if a spouse is working and earning too much, you're going to be automatically knocked out as well. So keep that in mind. Remember that the downsizer legislation is great. It had its purpose to release a huge amount of value in people's homes. But keep in mind that anything that's left over after you purchase that downsizer property could be added to your asset test levels and therefore deemed for the income test, not just the super that you may have or the rent or whatever else you have. Defined benefit income is going to fall under that income test. So if you've got a DFRDB, MSBS and one of those four pensions, that income will be assessed. So again, one spouse may be eligible, but the other spouse has an income that pushes you over. You're going to struggle to show that, you know, as a couple, you can meet that test. And keep in mind that it's the test that gives you the least benefit. You might look great on the income test, but have assets that are over the asset level. Therefore, you miss out. On the flip side, you might have income from working or part-time employment or a defined benefit pension or rent, but you might have assets that are under the asset test and the income test takes you over. So remember, it's the test that gives you the least benefit as to the one that they're going to use.
And the final thing to remember is 67 is not necessarily your retirement age.
No.
It's just the age at which you might be able to get a Centrelink age pension.
Yes.
If you're eligible.
Yes.
You can work until you're 77 if you want, or you can retire when you're 60 if you've got the money.
Work till you're 107. But again, 60 for retirement, 67 for Centrelink. They are not the same.
Indeed. So, Luke, where can listeners get more information?
Yeah, office number 6260-4749. We've got envisionfinancial.com.au on the internet. That's Envision with an E. We've got the podcast, The Strategy Stacker, Luke Talks Money on iTunes and Spotify. We've got YouTube. We've got Envision Financial Canberra. You can subscribe to that and get all of the shows and watch it on your phone. And as a client said today, my daughter told me we're on the TikToker. The Strategy Stacker handle there. And these types of considerations in relation to Centrelink are all in a chapter in Smart Money Strategy, Your Ultimate Guide to Financial Planning, available in all good bookstores.
Including some bad ones.
Correct.
Indeed. It's in every bookstore. And it's online as well.
It is.
Absolutely. Luke, thanks very much for coming in today.
See you next week.
Luke Smith from Envision Financial back with us in the studio again next Friday afternoon at the same time when we will address yet another topic on how to do better with managing your financial affairs.